Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Welcome, good to have you here on Sunday night on ABC Radio. Well, this week in Australia, we've begun to see the first stirrings of the debate surrounding the proposed plebiscite on marriage equality. The Australian Christian Lobby have called for the suspension of anti-discrimination laws during the plebiscite. And the Human Rights Commission rubbished the ACL call, describing it as outrageous and based on a misunderstanding of the law. And in a separate move, about 40 religious leaders have written to the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, urging him to ditch the plebiscite plan altogether, arguing it will damage the standing of religious communities and harm the mental health of gay people. Well, tonight we're joined by a panel of varying Christian perspectives. It's a pleasure to welcome the Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby, Lyle Shelton. Also, the Reverend Margaret Maymond, Minister of Pitt Street Uniting Church in Sydney, and Dr. John Carmody, prominent Sydney Catholic layman and President of the Catholic Historical Society. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, good evening, John.
Good evening to all the listeners.
Thanks very much, John. Good to be with you.
Lyle Shelton, let me come to you first. Do you think we should have a plebiscite anyway?
John, I think the answer to that is yes. There's been, and the reason is because this has been given a very good go in the Australian Parliament now for 10 years. There's been 17 attempts legislatively to change the definition of marriage in the Commonwealth Parliament alone over that period, most of that in the last 4 or 5 years. And then the issue has gone around to all of the state parliaments, sometimes more than once, before the High Court in 2013 said that this was not a matter for the states to deal with. There's been numerous Senate inquiries. I've forgotten how many. We have submitted to each, given evidence at many, oral evidence. There's been a House of Reps inquiry. None of those inquiries have found any discrimination against same-sex couples, because in 2008 that was all removed. So this has had a big go in the Parliament, both Commonwealth and state. And I think given that those who are agitating for a change to the definition of marriage have continued their campaign, which is their right in a democracy, I think the Parliament was left, and the government, the then Abbott government, was left really with only one choice, and that is to say, okay, well, if you want to continue this campaign, let's let the people decide. And that's what they did. And of course, Mr. Turnbull has reaffirmed that. And we're on a course for a people's vote or plebiscite to be held after the next federal election, whenever that may be.
Margaret Maymond, you're one of those who signed a letter to say you don't think a plebiscite's a good idea. Do you just want to outline why?
I think there are a number of reasons why it's not a good idea. I think that it's highly polarising. It will be polarising within faith communities because there's not one view within people of faith about this issue at all. And it's a highly politicised moral debate that really doesn't need to happen in the public sphere. It will divide families and church communities. I think because of the way people are behaving already, it will discredit the voice of faith communities and make it more difficult for us to participate in public life in the future. The Catholic bishops in Ireland have said, you know, that they came out badly as a result of that referendum. It did not help their advancing the gospel in society. I think, really sadly, it will provide a platform for people to disparage LGBTI Australians and their families, and it will be damaging to children who are being brought up by same-sex couples and to same-sex couples and to people of queer orientation generally. And there's a real danger that for people who are vulnerable, this vitriolic public conversation, which appears to be that we're on the threshold of, is likely to cause depression, anxiety, and possibly suicide. And I think that the main reason that it's not a good idea is that those who are opposed have said that no matter what the outcome is, they will vote against it. They will not pay attention to the will of the Australian people. And it's an incredibly expensive exercise, potentially $160 million. And if people aren't going to listen to the voice of the people, which is quite obvious through various opinion polls that have been taken, it's a waste of money and it's damaging to the well-being of many Australian people.
Mm. Lyle Shelton, just on that final point, do you think if there is a plebiscite, that both sides, that is, whatever side is the losing side in that plebiscite, must agree to have to be bound by the will of the people in the parliamentary vote?
Yes, I do, John. Whilst technically and legally a plebiscite is not binding on the parliament, the whole point of this exercise, after this relentless push in the parliament over many, many years, is to take the temperature of the people, to ask the people for their views. So I think the parliament should go with what the people decide, and I think that should apply on both sides. It's interesting, no one has asked Adam Bandt or Penny Wong which way they will vote. I suspect they would have a similar view to those who feel strongly on the other side, but I would just say to people on both sides, I think the will of the people should be abided by.
So if there is somebody who feels very strongly, according to their Christian conscience, that they couldn't vote for this as a Member of Parliament, that they should feel bound by their party on this?
Well, and that goes for Adam Bandt and Penny Wong and Sarah Hanson-Young and many others who feel strongly on the other side. I think they should abide by the people's decision. They don't have to legally, and I suspect on both sides, whichever way it goes, there may be some who don't do that. But I think the parliament as a whole will vote according to the way the people have said and spoken through the plebiscite, and I think that's the way it should be.
Yes, because the question, independent of the issues, is if people don't feel bound by it, then why bother to have it?
I think the reason we are having this is because the parliament has... this has taken up an incredible amount of parliamentary time. I've been in Canberra for 9 years watching politics very closely, and ACL's involved in heaps of other issues besides this. And but this issue gets more attention than just and more parliamentary time in terms of committees and motions and parliamentary tactics than pretty much anything else. It's unbelievable. So I think, you know, it is proper that it goes to the people, and it's not a waste of $160 million to decide public policy, which is going to have a very real impact on the rights of children, and to entrench in culture and in law the idea that some children shouldn't be allowed to know the love of their mother and father. And I think that's the sort of thing that the Australian people should decide on, because that's the consequence of this change to the definition of marriage in law.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those issues in a moment. Just before we leave this constitutional stuff, Jack Carmody, there's one issue here that some people have raised that goes to the threshold of the nature of our parliamentary system. They say, look, we have, for good or ill, a representative democracy. We don't have direct democracy for very good reasons.
This is a nonsense. There is no tradition of plebiscites in this country. We're not Swiss cantons. I've been watching politics ever since I was 11, and I cannot recall a single occasion when there has been a plebiscite conducted in this country in a public way in this fashion. Yes, we have referenda when the constitution needs to be changed or varied. Everything else we leave to the parliament. We have representative democracy. We elect parliamentarians to make decisions for the welfare of the country. It is a waste of $160 million because there is no legal force in it, and there's one reason why it's being held, and it's nothing to do with all the pious hopes which Lyle has just espoused. It's to do with the fact that the previous Prime Minister was worried that it might actually get through the parliament, and it was a delaying tactic. And I hope that he and his friends, whatever the rights and wrongs of their positions, politically they were concerned and vulnerable, as was his position as Prime Minister, and this was a delaying tactic. It was exactly the same tactic as John Howard engaged in the Republican debate when he told a journalist friend of mine in London just before he became leader of the government that he would have a convention and he would kick it into touch. And that's exactly what this was all about. It is a scandalous waste of public money. We don't need this. The parliamentarians are elected to make decisions, and that's what they should do.
What about the issue of conscience from your point of view? Is there not an obligation on the primacy of conscience for people when they're in Parliament? And this goes to the question of
John,
if there is a plebiscite...
John, we're not talking about a religious question here. We are talking about the civil government in a secular society and what pertains to civil society. It's not conscience, it is law.
But if there is a vote of the Parliament and some people... that's following a plebiscite, do you think that people should feel bound by that plebiscite?
Well... the church, this is not a theocracy. This is a church which a democracy which separates church from state. This is concerning a definition of a civil contract. It is not a matter of conscience. It is a matter of a civil contract.
Yeah, but some people may say my conscience dictates when they're in Parliament and cross the floor.
Well, that's their right.
Okay, so you would not have a problem with, if, and it appears that we are going ahead with the plebiscite at the moment, if somebody in Parliament said, well, look, irrespective of the plebiscite, I have to follow my conscience.
It wouldn't be the first time. It wouldn't be the first time that governments have promised one thing before an election. I don't want to get into too much recent history, but it wouldn't be the first time that governments have promised that either they would do something or wouldn't do something, and when they came to power, they decided to change their mind. That's the sort of thing that electorates live with, and they can take their revenge or not in 3 years' time, depending on how serious they think it is. But it is a civil issue. We're dealing with a civil contract. Nobody is obliging the churches to do anything here.
Margaret Raymond, this issue of the constitution, not the constitutionality of it, because we're quite entitled to do it, but the sort of precedent this may set, adds another layer of complexity to the whole debate. And it's a debate not related to the foundational issues at stake.
Mm-hmm. So the, you know, foundational issues, I think, have been well expressed by Jack, that this is an issue for the state to consider about its understanding of marriage. And the good thing about what's being proposed is that it won't have any impact on people's religious understandings about marriage. But what it will do is provide protection for children who are currently being raised by same-sex couples, and it will provide recognition for them and social stability. So, and a lot of Australian people want that for their families. So for me, those are the key issues that we need to return to, the human lives that are affected by this.
Lyle Shelton, the plebiscite issue, it seems that it's fairly well settled. Do you get any sense that there is the possibility of the plebiscite not going ahead despite the representations of people like Margaret and others?
No, I think the Prime Minister and the Attorney General have made it very clear that the plebiscite is going ahead, so it is settled. But I would just correct something with respect that Margaret said earlier. Australia has had a number of plebiscites in the past. The last one was around the National Song back in the 70s. And then the conscription, they're often colloquially referred to as the conscription referenda. Actually, some of those were actually plebiscites. So it is a mechanism that that is available to our parliament. It's not often used, Margaret's right there, but it has been used in the past.
Mm. Well, let's go to the second question that's at issue here, and that is, Lyle, your suggestion that provisions of the Anti-Discrimination Act should be suspended for the duration of the public debate leading to such a plebiscite. Just outline your reasons for that.
Yeah, it hasn't been that widely reported, although News Limited have given it a fairly good go. But down in Tasmania, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Hobart, Julian Porteous, distributed a booklet which was produced by the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference. It's a pastoral letter entitled Don't Mess With Marriage, just outlining Catholic and indeed Orthodox Christian teaching on marriage. I'm not a Catholic, but I agree with what's in the booklet. It very respectfully outlines not in any way hateful or disparaging of people who are same-sex attracted, what marriage is and what it means for children and particularly their rights to, wherever possible, be loved and raised by their own mother and father, of course, which is put in jeopardy through changing the definition of marriage. So this booklet was produced. Many bishops throughout the country distributed it. Archbishop Porteous in Hobart decided to send it home with children in a sealed envelope to the parents of children who were enrolled in Catholic schools in Tasmania. That shouldn't be anything out of the ordinary. A Catholic church owns the schools. They should have the right to distribute Catholic and Christian teaching, which they did. But this outraged the leader of Australia's marriage equality movement, Rodney Croom, who said that Archbishop Porteous was making these children couriers of hate and prejudice, very extreme language. And he urged people to report Archbishop Porteous to the Human Rights Commission in Tasmania. A Greens candidate, Greens political party candidate by the name of Martine Delaney, who is a man who now identifies as a woman, reported Archbishop Porteous to the Tasmanian Human Rights Commission. And just before Christmas, the Commissioner, Robin Banks, said that Archbishop Porteous had a case to answer. And not only did he have a case to answer, but the entire Australian Catholic Bishops Conference had a case to answer. So my concern is this is a chilling effect on freedom of speech for anyone on our side who simply wants to distribute material which has been believed by Christian people and Muslim people and many other people of no faith for millennia. Suddenly this is now seen as in breach of the law, as Rodney Croom said, and this process before the commission is ongoing. Now, I don't think we can have a fair plebiscite debate with these state-based anti-discrimination laws, and they exist in other states of Australia as well, because many people will think, I don't want to fall foul of a government process and with the threat of potential legal action simply for speaking out in a most respectful way on marriage. So it's a real problem.
Well, let's be realistic here, John.
Well, hang on a minute. Without getting into the sort of legal technicalities at the moment, let's first deal with the principles of the anti-discrimination law in this regard, just the principles of whether or not such a debate needs the safeguards of the anti-discrimination law, in fact. Margaret, first.
Well, I think if you look at that Don't Mess With Marriage booklet, it is very disturbing. It made claims that same-sex people are not whole people. It said that same-sex marriage messes with children, and it was delivered to children. And, you know, how many children are going to carry something home in a sealed envelope without having a look at it? And it became part of the public conversation within the Catholic school system.
So you do have some concerns with that book. You think that the actions in Tasmania were not...
I think they were grounds for concern, and everybody has the right to make a complaint. I think what's happened is that the parties have been brought into conciliation, and that there will be a respectful and monitored public conversation between them, not public conversation. And that's what needs to happen. People need to not be throwing stones at each other and to say the kind of things that the Catholic bishops have said that are really deeply offensive to families with same-sex parents and to individuals who identify as LGBTI. It really is not acceptable to use that kind of hateful language that was legally was possible to discriminate for so long, but it's not now. We have changed the nature of our understanding of the kind of debate that we have. And I believe that Christian people and Muslim people who feel that same-sex marriage is not a good thing, is not part of their religion, should be able to make their arguments without resorting to things that vilify and denigrate the relationships of others. And I think that Jesus, who we seek to follow, told us to love our neighbours. And I think that that booklet was not expressed in a neighbourly way.
Mm. John Carmody, you're somebody who goes to Mass regularly on a Sunday?
Well, first of all, I haven't read the booklet, so I don't know whether Lyle is right in saying it was very respectful or Margaret's right in saying it was very disturbing. The point is that until the courts have decided that it was a violation of the law, it is not a violation of the law. So for people to beat this up to something which is going to somehow or other impede their argument or capacity for argument is I think, over-egging a pudding. I must say that given the activities of the present Royal Commission, when I saw that they'd put out a document called Don't Mess With Marriage, when the accusations are that a lot of priests have been messing with children for a long time, I thought it was pretty ill-advised, but that's another story. It just seems to me that we have a civil society, and legislation exists to, first of all, act as a kind of benchmark, as an aspiration that all of us should see in the law the characteristics of the civil society which we aspire to, and that sometimes people are going to fall short of that, and we need to have the law to back us up. But the people who are saying that the it is all state legislation, and that's part of the problem. We're dealing with a federal issue because marriage is part of the constitutional responsibility of the federal government, and where the federal government actually doesn't legislate, so far as I'm aware, doesn't touch on this. It's all state legislation. And I think it would be a very messy situation if we were to get different states deciding to respond to this call so that we had, for a federal campaign, we had a mishmash of state legislations. But more importantly than that, it's a double-edged sword because just take the Tasmanian Act, for example, which does deal with this sort of thing, and it says that a public act which incites hatred towards, serious contempt for, or severe ridicule of various groups will be an offence. And one of them is that it should not ridicule or impugn or incite hatred towards the religious beliefs or affirmations or religious activities of other groups. So if the Christian lobby, whoever they represent and whatever they stand for, and I don't think it's the mainstream churches, asking to suspend that, it's not going to happen, but if they ask to suspend that, they're asking also that their own protections under those acts will be withdrawn. And that seems to me to be a very foolish thing to do.
Lyle?
Yeah, just there's quite a few things to pick up there. First of all, just to pick up John's point about, you know, the mainstream, John's right, we don't claim to be a peak body for the Christian Church in Australia. We're a grassroots organisation, but we are in regular contact with the leaders of pretty much all the major denominations. In fact, the only one I haven't met is, I believe, Stuart McMillan, who's the president of the Uniting Church. But my father knows him and says he's a good man who has orthodox views on the definition of marriage. As does every other denomination in Australia. So I don't know who these 40 leaders who wrote to Malcolm Turnbull last week are, but I know that all of the main denominational leaders in Australia signed an open letter to Tony Abbott last year. There was even Muslim leaders associated with that. So there's no denomination in Australia who believes that marriage should be redefined. Christian teaching, you know, hasn't changed on that in any of the denominations, apart from the
Quakers.
Wait
a minute, of any denomination.
Just a moment.
Public opinion polls tell us, John, that's nonsense. Public opinion polls tell us that the majority of people are not with these religious leaders that have just been cited. Let's get that out of the open.
Let Lyle have his say. Lyle.
That may be the case. I'm sure there's some people in churches who have a different view to their leaders. There's some people in churches who don't believe in the resurrection, the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ or the incarnation. So there are various views, but Christian teaching certainly hasn't changed at a denominational level and a leaders level. John says that the issue in Tasmania, you know, is not a big deal. It is a big deal because if you've been subject to one of these Human Rights Commission processes, so all someone has to do is lodge a complaint and then you are legally bound to respond to that complaint. Once you get the letter from the Human Rights Commission, you have to respond. Now, you know, it may be something that can be worked out easily. I don't know. I mean, the Porteous matter has been dragging on for months and months and is still unresolved. So if you're thinking, if you're a layperson thinking about participating in the democratic process, participating in the plebiscite debate, and you're seeing what's being done to an archbishop who put out a booklet written by the Catholic Bishops Conference, by John's church, saying, yeah, don't mess with marriage. Same-sex marriage messes with kids. Now, I think that's unfortunate that people have, you know, drawn the parallels with the appalling issue of child sexual abuse. But the point...
What do they mean by messes with kids?
This is why it's important for people to read the actual booklet. It does mess with children because if anyone has read the 2008 Senate inquiry into donor-conceived children in Australia, and there's been some inquiries done at state level as well, you know that donor-conceived kids have a hole in their heart because of them being denied the love of and the knowledge of their biological parent.
Not what this conversation is about. The issue of donor-conceived children is an entirely separate matter. It involves same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples. And the research shows that children who are raised by same-sex couples do as well, if not better, than children raised by opposite-sex couples. And it's just spurious to bring this into the conversation about legally changing the law around marriage. It is just outrageous to continue to do that when that is not what the issue is. And, you know, to not change it harms children. And that's been very clear. And there are many children who are passionate advocates for marriage equality because it will make such a huge difference to them and to their families.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio, through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you and our guests this evening discussing the proposed plebiscite on marriage equality in Australia. Lyle Shelton, the Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby, the Reverend Margaret Maiman, Minister of Pitt Street Uniting Church in Sydney and a signatory of a recent letter to the PM, the Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, from religious leaders asking that the provisions of the Anti-Discrimination Act not be suspended for the plebiscite, and that the plebiscite itself should be forgotten about. And also Dr. John Carmody, prominent Sydney Catholic layman and president of the Catholic Historical Society. We did, towards the end of that conversation, get into the substantive issue behind the proposed plebiscite and the debate over same-sex marriage, that is the traditional understanding of marriage. Lyle Shelton, this is somewhat problematic as various cultures have slightly different understandings of marriage. What for you is the traditional understanding of marriage?
Well, the understanding of marriage as practiced for millennia across cultures and religions is that marriage is between a man and a woman. The only reason government is interested in marriage is because the government is interested in the socialisation of the next generation. And this comes to Margaret's point, and many of those arguing for a change to the definition of marriage try and say that this has nothing to do with children. But of course it has everything to do with children, because governments want to have some sort of a legal contract to ensure that men and women who produce children have an incentive to stay together, because it's known and social science research bears this out that children when raised by the intact biological mum and dad do better on every count. And you can't have marriage equality for two men or for two women unless there's unfettered access to assisted reproductive technology, either anonymous sperm donation, that's ethically problematic, or to commercial surrogacy. And we're seeing the calls for commercial surrogacy, for Australia's ban and prohibition on commercial surrogacy to be lifted by those who are advocating for a change in the definition of marriage, because the two are a package deal. The French knew this. The French, who redefined marriage last year through a parliamentary vote, it was surrogacy and same-sex marriage together. When a million people marched on the streets, the government got scared and decoupled surrogacy. They ditched surrogacy and passed gay marriage at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now President Hollande wants to revisit the surrogacy issues. And so this is well known. The two are tied, yet you can't consider public policy without considering the consequences. And of course, a big consequence is that you have to get into these areas of ethically dubious assisted reproductive technology, which is exploitative of women and of course denies the rights of the child.
Margaret.
Look, a third of children in Australia are born to non-married parents, and we know what makes for a good outcome for children. That's loving parents who are committed to them. I agree that there are complicated issues around surrogacy and donation, and they need to be talked about by people having civil conversations with one another and by listening to experts who are looking at the ethics of these issues. But it is not the issue. It's going to make no difference at all to the, you know, marriage equality will make no difference to the number of people seeking those kind of supports to have children and to care for children.
Really? Why has Thailand banned commercial surrogates? Why has India said no to gays? I mean, these countries realise it does make a difference. And why is the Human Rights Commission saying that the lack of access to commercial surrogacy is a problem for gay males in the context of advocating for a redefinition of marriage?
It's not in the context of a discussion about marriage at all.
You might want to read Tim Wilson's report, Resilient Individuals.
Yeah, well, I just think it's an absolute red herring in this conversation about the legal right to marriage, and it's not helping us. And I also think it's really important when we look at, you know, the nature of marriage over history to understand that marriage has been evolving, that it's changed through history, that, you know, initially that it was a property arrangement, it was... women were not equal in marriage. There have been so many changes to the nature of marriage. And I think they're mostly changes that have been brought about by heterosexual people, so that marriage is now primarily seen as a relationship of love and commitment. And it's because of that that gay and lesbian people want to get married.
Yes, Jack Carmody, I believe on a Catholic side, the church was very suspicious about the whole institution of marriage up until the late Middle Ages.
Well, first of all, let me just say something about this children issue. Of course the children are important, and it may be that the gay people I know are not typical, but I don't think most of the gay couples, in my experience, who would like to have the right to have a relationship which is called marriage, are actually particularly concerned about the children at all. I think that would be a proportion of gay people, of homosexual people, but it's not, it seems to me, so big a proportion as to make that the fundamental issue, which Lyle seems to be doing. I mean, I know people who are well past the reproduction age and would like very much to get married. Now, there has been, I think, a change in the gay community in this respect as well, that when I was younger, things were very hard for gay people and they wanted at times to seem different from other people and not to be part of the conventional mainstream. If they've changed their view, then that fact ought to be respected. But I don't think they've changed that view because they want to have children so much as they want some sort of public legal affirmation of the nature of their relationship. So I think that's an important point. Mm. And with all due respect, I think Lyle is engaging in a red herring there. But in terms of marriage, governments, whether they're formal governments or whether they're tribal chiefs, have always been interested in some sort of reproductive arrangement because it's in the interests of society to have stable families, because the impetus, the crucial thing is that the DNA be passed on, and it doesn't matter whether it's David Jones or a university or a family or a society, you've got to worry about and care for the next generation. And that's why governments have been interested. And you're quite right, John. The Catholic Church did not sacralise marriage until about the 11th century. So it wasn't a sacrament before then. So for the first 1,000 years of Christendom, marriage was not a sacrament at all. And even now, in my 1965 edition of the Catholic Encyclopedia, the demeaning secondary purpose of marriage is for the control and the sublimation of fornication. Now, if that's all that marriage is in the eyes of the Church, it's a pretty poor lookout. And the celibate state is always regarded as superior. That's why it's so touching that the bishops are concerned about marriage now, when they've always preached that the celibate state is superior. Following on St. Paul, it's better to be, well, if you can't control yourself, marry, that's better than burning. It's all very, very demeaning. And as you say, people, Catholics were only allowed to marry Catholics. My late father-in-law used to say he was married in the kitchen when he married a Catholic woman. I think it was the sacristy, but the kitchen has a certain colour to it. So that relationship, which was sacralised in a Catholic church, was regarded as very second rate. So the record is far from the homogeneous concern for marriage, which some of the proponents of the present argument would have us believe.
We've got lots of calls on the board. Time to take some. Let's go to Helen in Healesville. Helen, thank you for joining us. Welcome. What would you like to say?
I met a gentleman who'd been adopted by a good adoptive family, and then I think it was as an adult he met his natural family, and he was amazed how at home he felt with them, including the aunties and uncles.
And so what's the point you're wanting to make?
I think it's important that the relationship between a child and their natural parents be respected.
Okay, good. Thank you for that. That's from Helen in Healesville. We will move on to Robin in Castlemaine. Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you.
Yeah, what'd you like to say?
I'm just wondering about the word plebiscite.
Yes.
I didn't know what that meant, and I just went and looked it up in its referendum. So why is it changed to plebiscite?
Well, they are not quite the same thing. And we'd probably, Lyle, you may want to explain the difference quite briefly.
Yeah, it's a legal issue. Under the Constitution, a referendum involves a majority of people and a majority of states. So there's a double majority. It's also a referendum in the Australian political context is used to change the Constitution. On this occasion, it's not necessary to change the Constitution. The government is simply looking for to understand what the Australian people think on the issue. So it's a plebiscite or people's vote rather than a constitutional change.
And on the line, Anna Brown, who is a lawyer with Human Rights Law Centre in Melbourne. Hello, Anna. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, fine. You may be able to clarify a couple of those legal issues for us.
Well, I was just having to think, as I was listening to the show, one of the big misconceptions about the Tasmanian law is that there is actually an exemption that allows for public debate on matters of the public interest, if that's done in good faith. So I guess it was just to make the point that there is quite a broad exception that, just in a similar way to the debate about 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act, people tend to forget that there's a broad exemption in 18D of that act that may be factoring into this conversation as well. So actually there is, in my view, more than enough leeway in state law for there to be a robust and properly informed debate about this issue.
John, I'd like to think that was the case. The Porteous matter's been dragging on for more than 6 months now, the threshold for triggering a complaint is very low. It's not at hatred, as Gillian Triggs said. If it was just at hatred, I probably wouldn't be bothering. But it actually is a low bar. Just an offence, someone feeling offended is enough to allow someone then to go to the commission and lodge a complaint, which, as I said before, you are legally bound to respond to. You cannot just ignore those complaints. And for ordinary people watching this, they're thinking, why would I bother getting involved in the marriage debate, standing up for the rights of children, advocating for marriage between a man and a woman, when I could be slapped with a human rights complaint and have to front up to a government commissioner?
Lyle Lord, the Act does not refer to offended at all. The Act refers to hatred towards serious contempt for or severe ridicule.
It contains the word offence.
That's not offended.
The Tasmanian Parliament's looking at amending
it
at the moment.
And if the Commissioner thought that it was just somebody's feelings being hurt, it wouldn't have been taken seriously.
Anna Brown, that?
I think, again, looking back to the example of the Racial Discrimination Act, the courts have been very clear that trivial matters aren't enough to enliven these provisions. And I think Lyle really is just in the same way that people can make complaints under a number of other mechanisms, this is just one of those. It's a conciliation process. The majority of these types of complaints are conciliated successfully, and the matter ends there. So it's really every person's right to bring a complaint if they feel that they have, and the word is actually offend. Lyle was correct, offend, humiliate, intimidate, insult, or ridicule. But remembering that there's basically a truck driven through that protection, in the sense that anyone making a statement in good faith for any purpose in the public interest is able to do so. So really,
yes, but Anna, if I could just
public debate on a plebiscite is, I think it covers a lot of what ACL would like to be saying in this matter.
But Anna, if I could just jump in there, because we've now got a Catholic bishop and the entire Catholic Bishops' Conference tied up in a legal process that's been dragging on for 6 months. So this isn't allowing free speech. I understand they've had to spend money on lawyers. Now for ordinary people, at the risk of causing offence to someone, a lot of people are just electing to stay silent. For a start, none of us like being called bigots and haters and the things that we get routinely thrown at us. And this is not about hate. It's about being respectful, but it's about arguing your point. But then overlay that with a legal process. And it's not just Tasmania. I know people in Queensland who have also fallen foul of these laws and had these cases dismissed, but not before spending a lot of time and money and effort to go through the process. Now, if we're going to have a free debate and a free argument, people have got to be able to put their case without having to front up to a government commission.
John, could I just say that?
Yes.
I just wonder, would Lyle be happy for the racial vilification laws to be dropped while we have a referendum about recognition of Indigenous people in Australia? Because that's the equivalent of what he's asking in this. It's just not an acceptable way to conduct public debate. And I think, especially as people of faith, we ought to be able to do this without crossing a threshold that will trigger these kind of, you know, the need for this kind of complaint. You can make your argument respectfully, but you need to listen in order to do that as well. And that's just not what is happening with the opponents to marriage equality at the moment.
I'm very happy for people to put forward examples of where we've been vitriolic or hateful, or where the Catholic Bishops' Conference have. But the concern is that these laws have a very low threshold and it's a break on free speech. It's not a licence to vilify, but there is a low threshold which allows one side of the debate to be taken off to a commission simply for making some of our key arguments. And I think that's probably why Rodney Croom went after the Catholic bishops, because he doesn't want people talking about the impacts on children, the fact that same-sex marriage does require a child to miss out on its biological mother and father to satisfy the desires of two adults.
Well, that may or may not be the case. Anna, a final word from you before we have to let you go.
Well, just to say, really, I mean, I could obviously respond at length to what Lyle said, but let's really take a reality check here. As Margaret said, we haven't needed to suspend racial discrimination laws. These laws that apply to everyone, that provide some boundaries, that prohibit hateful speech that stirs up violence and discrimination, haven't prevented respectful debate for decades, whether it's on same-sex marriage or other controversial issues. And just as there's protections for gay people and transgender people, there's also protections for religious groups. So I think they're fair laws, they're operating sensibly, and I think Lyle really is exaggerating the impact.
Well, Anna, I agree with you, and I would put it in a slightly different way. It really does sound to me, listening to what Lyle's saying, that his real concern is not just the specific case of the present debate, but that he actually resents those laws in general, and that he really would prefer that they weren't there.
John, happy to take that up. I do think there is a problem with these laws. I think certainly there should be no incitement to violence, but these are very subjective, holding someone up to contempt or ridicule. I mean, Bernard Keane, the regular commentator on the ABC, tweets abusive things to me all the time. He said I was a nauseating piece of filth on Twitter. This week he called me a creep. Now, I'm not going to take him off to some government commission. I don't like that, but if he wants to ridicule me like that, that's fine. But if I tweeted that about Rodney Croom or anyone else or a gay person, I would be hounded out of my job. Now, I just think we do need a reality check. I think these things are a break on free speech. And if you're looking to participate in this debate, knowing that the other side can march you off to a commission, not for being
it's
hateful, but for simply...
It's always the other side.
It is in this case because you know, no one's defending me over Bernard Keane's abuse.
But you also relate to your religious beliefs. This is the essence of these protections, that you don't attack or ridicule a particular vulnerable group, whether that's a religious or faith community, a person of colour, or a gay person.
And no one's been attacked or ridiculed. The Catholic Bishops' Conference didn't attack or ridicule anyone. They simply made a case that if you change the definition of marriage, that's going to affect children. And they were marched off to a commission for it.
Law has found them guilty of that.
No, but it's been a 6-month process, Anna, and it's still unresolved, and the commissioner says they have a case to answer. If you're a layperson watching this and thinking, am I going to participate in the plebiscite debate, knowing that I could end up in court or a tribunal, a lot of ordinary people are just going to say this is too hard.
Anna, we'll have to let you go there, Anna. We've got a lot of other calls on the board. Thanks so much for your involvement. That's Anna Brown of the Human Rights Law Centre in Melbourne. And we've got about 6 minutes to take some more calls. Let's go to Lee in Tamworth. Hello, Lee. How are you? Lee, can you hear us?
Now, I would like to take up on a point that was said, I can't remember what guest it was earlier on, about the amount of energy that this argument takes up in the Parliament. And listening, since I've been on hold and listening initially in the program, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of to-ing and fro-ing from people extremely concerned about this issue from very specific points. But to me, and a lot of other people that are probably listening to this and thinking about it, this is an issue that affects a fairly small percentage of the population, and the energy that is consumed on it is enormous. We have issues that confront the broader community that I feel are so much more important, and I hear an enormous amount of energy and time and people's intellects and political persuasions and what have you being chewed up by this, and I feel it needs to be resolved as soon as possible so we can get on with things that mean more to the broader community.
So do you think we should have a plebiscite?
Well, I would say that yes, it's probably the way to go, and I feel that the results of that plebiscite should be respected, and I dare say that it would be in favour of just getting on with this thing so that we can basically stop debating it.
Thanks for your observations. We will move to another caller, to Peter in Queensland. Peter, how are you?
Yeah, good, man. Good. I rang earlier and I was just explaining that I've got a gay son, and I've had nothing but trouble with him, and I got to know a lot of his friends and I got friendly with a lot of them, and they explained to me a lot of the capers they get up to, and one fella told me about taking his two sons to this party one night with all gay people, and they tried to get these 14 and 13-year-old boys into a ring-a-ring of Rosie. Now, I'm frightened that if this marriage business is made legal, that too many pedophiles are going to be getting hold of children.
Okay. There is a... that's a story, the sort of subterranean stories that you hear from time to time, Margaret.
And you hear terrible stories about people in all sectors of society, but it is just patently unacceptable to equate homosexuality and paedophilia. There is no connection at all, and it really is. That's the kind of thing that will be said. This caller's point makes the point about why a plebiscite is going to be such a dangerous conversation for so many vulnerable young gay people, especially people growing up in centres outside of, in places outside the main centres where they don't have a lot of support. It's actually really dangerous conversation.
Lyle, what do you say to that? That a plebiscite is an invitation to public poison. In fact, the very issue that you're raising with regard to Julian Porteous is an example of that. That those people who want to make mischief will use this opportunity to really say some dreadful things.
I think there's always that potential for people to make mischief, and I think that's important for those who are involved in the public debate to call that out and to say that we won't tolerate it. But you certainly won't hear vitriolic or demeaning comments about people, certainly from myself or our organisation and sensible people who are involved in this debate. Any debate in Australian society will have people at the margins who will say inappropriate things. But
I've got to break you up there. We've got time for one other brief call. I'd like to get one other call in because it's from the Anglican Church in Albury, Archbishop Peter McLeod. Archdeacon, rather. I elevated you.
I got a bit elevated.
Yes.
Well, thank you. We had the pleasure of having Rodney Croon with us at St Matthew's in Albury this morning, and so I was fascinated by various thoughts about what he might or might not be saying. His concern actually was the children, and also I also think in terms of having a reality check, and being in the country is certainly a great time to put your feet on the ground. And
you've got about 40 seconds left.
Okay. If you put the idea of a plebiscite and the damage to children, mental health in the local area, and the fact that we have one of the highest youth suicide rates because of the way people are judged, this is $160 million.
We'll have to break in there, Archdeacon Peter McLeod. Thanks so very much for joining us. To Dr. John Carmody, to Margaret Maiman, and to Lyle Shelton. And Margaret, you haven't been speaking on behalf of the United Church.
Yeah, I want to say that. And I want to say there's a diverse view within the United Church.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.